I've had to wait quite a while to do this. The last edition was a discussion with Tony Leon, former leader of the Democratic Alliance, and he's not been much available since the May 29th election, as he was quickly swept up into the DA negotiating team once it became clear that President Cyril Ramaphosa was going to be unable to form an ANC government on its own. Those discussions seemed to take an absolute age as Ramaphosa positions himself to form a government of national unity, something many people took to be a sort of fig leaf to disguise what would essentially be a coalition of the DA and the ANC. But what then transpired is more or less, in my humble opinion, that Ramaphosa, desperate to hold his party close to him, seemed to bend his opponents to his will. And on Sunday night, he announced a 32-strong cabinet, with the ANC taking 22 posts, fully two-thirds, the DA, a paltry, in my view, six, and other smaller parties the rest. The outcome bore little resemblance to the DA's initial insistence that positions should be divided in proportion to the number of seats won between members of the GNU. In fact, of all the parties in the new government, the DA is, I think, the only one which has had to accept an offer of seats proportionally smaller than their May 29th vote. So, Tony, welcome back, and thank you so much for making the time. You spent 3 weeks back at the center of South African politics for the first time in more than a decade. Was it painful?
Very painful, Peter, and I'm pleased today to get the rest of my life back. I reminded myself frequently over the last 3.5 weeks why I actually left frontline politics in 2009 and why I'm not sorry that my frontline exposure or behind-the-scenes exposure is winding down right now.
Just elaborate a little bit. I mean, what is so awful about it?
Well, look, there's an enormous amount of maneuvering and posturing in politics. I'm sorry to say it's not always just about nobility and principles and policy. And we saw a lot of it recently. You know, you send off a letter and then the contents of the letter, which is fair, gets mischaracterized, it gets leaked, it gets weaponized. We saw a lot of that in the last few days. And I'm not a Boy Scout here, Peter. I understand how it works, but not always the most edifying thing. And also, you know, sometimes I quoted my legal mentor, Philip Penchars, who was one of my bosses when I was an article clerk 100 years ago, to Edward Nathan. And he said a written agreement is simply, for some of our clients, a basis for further negotiation. And we saw quite a lot of that after we'd signed this statement of intent on the 14th of June.
The DA was briefing quite hard that it had reached the end of the road and that unless it got the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition, as had been promised by President Ramaphosa, it wouldn't enter the GNU. I think the quote that I read somewhere was, "We are done." And within a day, though, it was back talking to him again, and it took a much reduced agriculture portfolio instead, no land reform, etc. Did it have, in the last, you know, did it really have any choice?
Well, I think that's a good question. And look, I don't want to sound like a goody two-shoes, but I didn't do very much or any of the briefing myself. So I'm not sure who said what to whom. I kept getting these queries. I said, "Oh, Merta." I hope people could understand basic Sicilian when I said that to some of the inquiries I got. You know, a very wise friend of mine who's had a major position in South African business, he now lives overseas. He sent me a note on Friday night at the height of this, and he said, "The Democratic Alliance was always playing with one trump short. If the ANC and the DA couldn't work it out, it would have ushered in the EFF and the MK, which would have been catastrophic for the country." So, that was a huge consideration. And there was a lot of pressures. I did get a lot of calls from a lot of people, some I know very well, some I hardly know, and many of them hold leading positions in our country outside of politics. And they said to me, some of them, "You've got to do this deal on almost any basis because the alternative is just disastrous for the country, for South Africa, Inc." And I think I and my fellow negotiators took that very seriously. So the question wasn't, did the DA, you know, get shafted? Of course, the DA got less than it was entitled to. It did not get a proportionate share. It got less than that. But on the other hand, if we hadn't had a very serious engagement on this and ultimately reached an agreement with the ANC, then what would have happened? And what would have happened would have been the EFF and the EMK, I guess, or Ramaphosa would have limped vote by vote through a parliament which he didn't control. And I think that equally would have been very destabilizing for the country, for its economic prospects, for the social fabric in our society. So I don't want to sound, you know, make this over dramatic, but those were the stark choices. So, of course, I think, you know, if I flip the coin the other side, well, the DA now has six cabinet seats, probably should have had nine, got six. And the question is, if the DA over the next 5 years or however long this arrangement lasts for, can't make a good fist of six seats in cabinet, which has never had before, six deputies, never in its history has the party had that or even thought it would get that. If it can't make a success of that, then you've got to say, well, there might be something wrong with the DA, never mind the other considerations, because I would have preferred that we had some other portfolios, but I think there are enough portfolios to show a distinctive DA sort of difference in government, I hope.
And what did you make of the final announcement on Sunday night?
Well, I thought he could have been on time, the president. That was the first thing I thought. I thought, you know, having started late, and his speech itself was quite interesting because he said something that, you know, has not been said for a long time in our country. He said it's very important that South Africans see themselves represented in the government. Well, that hasn't been the case for the last 30 years. You know, I'm probably one of the very few people in this country who believes in the Martin Luther King idea that you should judge a person by the content of his character, not the color of his skin. But we are a race-obsessed society. It's been weaponized in our politics, and indeed it's part of our history. But the fact is there are, for example, far more minorities in this cabinet than there have been since 1996. And if you want a government that looks more like South Africa actually looks, that's probably a very positive thing. You've also got some people in there who are not just party hacks. They do have a background other than politics, and that's probably also a good thing. And so I thought that Ramaphosa referencing both those things and also underlining two things that we actually from the DA side put into the statement of intent, that is that we have evidence-based decision-making and we have a professional non-partisan public service. I thought those were very important markers. Now, you know, the rhetoric's the easy part, Peter, as Mario Cuomo said, you know, you campaign in poetry and you govern in prose. And now we get into the more prosaic aspects, which is to actually make a difference, to prove. I think Ferial Haffagee said this morning, interesting headline, the Daily Maverick, very big, very bloated, but will the government of national unity cabinet be better? Well, she put a question mark at the end of that, and this government, vast though it is, actually has to turn the question mark into a full stop. So let's hope that they do.
It was extraordinary, though, how the president managed to squeeze in a minister or deputy minister into every single portfolio. Where the DA has a minister, they get an ANC deputy. Where the DA gets a deputy minister, they get an additional ANC deputy alongside him or her. You know, it almost looks as if there's a sort of an ANC shadow maybe to undermine or second guess, report to Luthuli House. I mean, they really are, you know, keeping the DA ministers and others as well under very close observation.
Yes, look, it doesn't have to become a political death row, exactly as de Klerk described his experience in the government of national unity, which is instructive, because the DA is not without its powers. I mean, in a sense, the DA has negative control in the sense that the DA is not a forced, is not there under forced servitude. The DA has an election. It can leave if, in fact, it cannot exercise its writ. If its ministers are nothing other than, you know, as we say in Afrikaans, winkelpoppe en defenster, the mannequins in the shop window, if that's what they become, then indeed they would have a just cause to say, this is not what we signed up for. Now, you know, I'm not saying this at the beginning, that's how you start off. You must start as I wrote in an article last week, in the utmost good faith. That's the basis of any partnership. So, look, I suspect that Ramaphosa did what he did because he had to bring his fractured party along. And, you know, a couple of folk in the ANC NEC were sending messages out, which I got them, and I'm very removed from the ANC. You know, there was an enormous wall of opposition to the ANC doing any business with the DA within the ANC, not incentive from the six negotiators or seven ANC people that I met with, or the DA negotiators met with. They were very on the level, competent, I thought very professional people, but they were just the tip. It was the iceberg underneath in the ANC NEC that I think had a lot of issues. So maybe this is, you know, Ramaphosa-esque way of squaring a circle. But, you know, I would expect, I'm not involved and I have no wish to be in the how the DA runs its governance, but the DA is going to correctly demand that its ministers be allowed to exercise executive authority in the appropriate way. And if the idea is you're going to box them in, then this arrangement will not endure. If that's just there because that's what the ANC needs to do to repair the fractures in its own movement, well, that's fine. It's very expensive for the country. But if it doesn't hinder governance and the DA ministers being able to operate in an effective way, then I guess that's the price you pay for a government which represents several parties, not just one party.
And Tony, while you were talking, did you ever get the impression that the ANC fully appreciated the enormity of their loss on May 29th? I mean, their vote fell pretty close to 29, more than 29%, to just over 40%. Did you think that, I mean, what was your impression of the team? You said they were very professional. Presumably they were led by the Secretary General of the ANC. What is your overall impression of
Well, the ANC Secretary General was only at two of our meetings. I mean, the rest of the meetings were there. They had a sort of negotiating core team. I don't know what it was called. That's some other term for it. It was led by, I thought, a very reasonable, smart guy called David Makura, whom I really didn't know very well, but he was once upon a time the Premier of Gauteng. But Sir David Makura was very reasonable, highly intelligent, and I thought very well briefed. But one of the ANC negotiators wasn't him said when I actually asked the question. I said, well, you know, you're not a 60% party. I didn't say it aggressively. You're a 40% party and we're a 22% party. We're not a 2% party. And the ANC person across the table said, yes, Tony, we fully recognize that we're a 40% party. So, I mean, at the level of the people we are talking to, absolutely, it was said, it was recognized. I'm not sure when those negotiators left the room, they went back into the echo chamber of the ANC. That was always appreciated by everyone, that actually, in order to have a government at all, you would have to enter into a compact with other parties. And that's what the statement of intent was all about on the 14th of June. And as you pointed out in your column, Peter, which I see caused an enormous stir on Mr. Survey's newspapers, which means it must have been correct that you said and I repeated it, was that actually if it were not for the DA votes, Ramaphosa would not have been elected president. And the ANC wouldn't have got the speakership and the ANC wouldn't have got the premiership of Gauteng. And there wouldn't be a government in KZN as is currently composed. All those were achieved in part, in significant part, by DA votes in parliament and other legislatures. So I think those are the arithmetical facts. The political consequences of the actual arithmetic might take a while to, you know, sink in, but let's see.
Yeah. And did you talk about how, while you were talking to David Makura and his team, did you talk about how it would all work? Siviwe Khwarube, for instance, the former DA chief whip, is now the Minister of Basic Education. What processes would she have to follow to get, say, the national matric pass to 35% rather than 30%, or does she just simply have to swallow what she inherits?
No, look, there's all that's been agreed so far, and it's a pretty bare bones outline, is in the statement of intent, which has a couple of priorities. It's got worthwhile values. And then it's got how the actual government's going to work. These are the so-called modalities, section 14 onwards. And it basically says the parties will work together in good faith, build a consensus, all good nice stuff. And then it goes on to say in clause 18, the government of national unity shall take decisions in accordance with established practice of consensus. Then it goes on to say what happens when there's no consensus. And this, presumably, I don't know, it hasn't been operationalized yet. We don't even have a cabinet that's been sworn in, will mean on policy and all other matters that parties, all the parties in the GNU, have an opportunity to express their views, and that reasonable attempts in the event of a disagreement are taken to reconcile the agreement and find common ground. And failing that, item three down the list, parties to the GNU representing 60% of the seats in the National Assembly agree. In other words, that the two biggest parties, which is the 40% party and the DA, make up 22%, and they're the only 62%, they're the only two parties in the entire GNU who get to that total, would have to reach an agreement. Now, you know, the moment you have to, you head towards clause 19, you've already got some degree of difficulty, because that's how you resolve a conflict. You very much hope in whatever processes, lahotlas, agreements that happen, that you actually can find common ground, and you should look for it first. And presumably what needs to happen is that the parties must first work out where they agree. And there are some, you know, areas of agreement, particularly in major matters like the economy and on various fiscal and monetary aspects. And there's also a provision later on in this agreement for a what is called a GNU consultation council, which is going to look at the monitoring of the government and how it's operating. So there are mechanisms envisaged in this agreement, which obviously have to be fleshed out, of how you would get things going. Because, I mean, the worst thing you want is just either paralysis or everyone operating in a silo and doing their own thing to the best that they can.
So I took a little reading over the weekend, and I came across an interesting reference to this sort of notion of sufficient consensus. Apparently that's what Cyril Ramaphosa and Rolf Meyer would use or agree to use during the CODESA talks 30 years ago, or more than 30 years ago now. It seems to have reappeared. There's a mechanism, a committee of wise heads, I suppose, that would look at disputes and blockages and clear them.
Yeah, and exactly. Look, at the end of the day, it was interesting. I've had several conversations. I mean, obviously, I'm one of the few people who was involved in these negotiations, just a function of my age. I think only Cyril Ramaphosa and I actually were involved in those negotiations in Kempton Park. Happily, there are younger teams on both sides. No, I think one or two of them were on the ANC side as well, who were involved with us. But I've got to say that, you know, one point that Rolf Meyer made to me in more recent times, he said everything flows from the top. In other words, if there's a good relationship between the leaders at the top, the government will work efficiently and well. If there isn't a good relationship or there's a bad relationship, then it's going to run into difficulty early on. And I think that's wise words from someone who has been around the block many times. And I would think that a lot of this, beyond the numbers, beyond the DA, whether it was shortchanged or the ANC was overcompensated, beyond the wording intent of this lettering of the statement of intent, depends crucially on the relationship at the top between Cyril Ramaphosa and John Steenhuisen and the other leaders in this government of national unity, because I think then all the other issues that you've flagged already and are worth looking at, such as, well, for every DA minister, there's an ANC deputy minister, for every DA deputy minister, there's another ANC deputy minister, all those things will become less weaponized or capable of being areas of conflict if, in fact, the agreement at the top provides sufficient following wind to be felt throughout the corridors of the new government.
Yeah. You know, both people like Dean McPherson at Public Works and Infrastructure, Leon Schreiber at Home Affairs, they aren't going to be pushovers, but my goodness, they'll be walking into environments totally dominated by ANC cadres. You know, where do you start when you walk into your office on day one?
Well, you'd have to ask them. It's rather them than me, but they you know, I know both Dean and Leon pretty well. And they are, as you say, no pushovers. They're smart people. They're politically very competent and, although quite young, very seasoned. So, you know, I don't think they're going to just accept being the sort of the parsley on the Sunday rose plate, there for decoration, but not very nourishing. I don't think that's their intention at all. And, you know, there was an enormous, complete sort of false flag operation arose over the last few days when the DA dared to suggest in this infamous letter, which was mischaracterized, as you pointed out, that was sent by Helen Ziller to the ANC Secretary General, Ms. Thembelula, which pointed out simply that, you know, there could be, if a DA minister was going to effectuate policy, it couldn't be something that could be, that could ever work if it was going to be opposed by someone who'd been appointed to their office for political reasons rather than reasons of public service competency. So I assume, you know, given the fury, probably was a feigned fury of the ANC response to that, that there won't be cadres who are director generals who are going to oppose their political principles. If they are, or if they behave like that, then that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Looking at the announcement yesterday, were there appointments other than DA appointments that you approved of? I rather thought that the splitting of energy and mining was a good thing.
Yeah, look, I don't know about the mining industry being so delighted, but I think, you know, people I spoke to, and in fact, one of the people who's been hugely involved for the last years in creating, I think comes into operation today, the energy transmission company, was absolutely thrilled that energy and electricity are together in one department. And, you know, Mr. Mantush has been severed from that because they thought this really was a good sign. And it indicates that Operation Vulindlela will actually start to bear more fruit than it has already. So I thought that was smart. I have to say, look, I don't know that's going to indicate much change, but I thought, for example, that having a new person at International Relations was probably a good thing. I think the previous incumbent was riding a hobby horse, which I'm not sure was doing South Africa's international trading alignments any good. I'm not going into the merits of the Gaza dispute, but it's getting significant blowback from places like Washington, and you don't want necessarily, if you're interested in growth and investment, that's probably not the smartest play in the world. So maybe that'll make a difference. Those were two. Look, I was a bit surprised, and I might be wrong, because a lot of these cabinet ministers I don't know. I did look up the new Minister of Justice, whom I didn't know, and I was surprised. It must be the first time in our history that the Minister of Justice is not a lawyer or doesn't have a legal background, the new minister. But I see the deputy is Andries Nel, who someone I've known very well over the years.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, he's very legally seasoned. So it's a mixed bag.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You know, we'll have time will tell, Peter. Time will tell.
And Tony, if you start it all over again, if you had the chance to sort of go back to May the 28th, what would you change? Would you have held out for more if you had started? Could you have held out for more if you had started earlier, or if you hadn't so quickly agreed to join the government and gone for confidence and supply instead? You know, keep a government in office, but, you know, without having to get your own hands dirty, as it were.
Yeah, look, you can, you know, with the, someone said, you know, with the lordly perspective of retrospective clairvoyance, I think was one of Christopher Hitchens' better lines. So I'm sure you could have done a lot of things differently. I have absolutely no regret. And I was one of the people who counseled for it. So let me put my hand up and take responsibility, because there was an absolute honest debate within the DA. Well, what should we do here? Should we go for confidence supply or a coalition? And, you know, I reminded my DA colleagues of that famous line of Nixon's that, yeah. you know, it was time of the Yom Kippur War. And he said, you can't be half pregnant. He said, you're going to be hanged if you send 30 planes or 300. So send anything that flies. And that really struck me as being the approach, because if the DA had simply said, well, we're not going into the government, but we'll support the government and the president and vote for him in the budget until we don't support any of those things, the average supporter of the party would have said, so you're in the government, but you're not in the government. You're supporting it, but you don't have any influence. So that would have, to me, been the worst of both worlds. This might not be the best of any worlds, but at least you have a chance, a bona fide chance, of influencing outcomes policy and making a difference in the lives of people who you elected to serve. I don't want to overstate it, but there's at least that prospect now.
You have now, though, you've got a sort of fairly, I wouldn't call it a wobbly government, but I mean an uncertain government. It's, you don't know each other, and we don't know what the modalities, as you call them, are going to look like. And you've got an extreme left-wing, or I suppose right-wing, possibly, depending on where you place fascism on the spectrum, opposition. We'll have to wait to see how parliament behaves. But, with someone like John Floppe as leader of the opposition, anything could happen.
I completely agree. Look, the biggest downside of this, to me, is that a party like the MK, and Floppe in particular, becomes the official opposition, I think, under our arrangement. So it's never really happened before, because the previous GNU happened before we had the 96 constitution. So we didn't have the post of leader of the opposition in the 93 constitution. There actually wasn't a leader of the opposition between 94 and 96. And when de Klerk exited the government, then he became the leader of the opposition because of the 96 constitution. Sorry, I sound like a bore, but those are the facts.
No. Yeah.
So now you've got a situation for the first time ever that the leader of what is effectively the fourth party in parliament, which is the MK, no, third party, I beg your pardon, the third party, becomes the leader of the opposition. I think that's how it's going to work, because the DA, half pregnant, can't be government and opposition. And I think that's quite a difficult moment for the country, for the constitution. I mean, he's a constitutional violator. We know that because Parliament's impeached him as a judge. He betrayed his judicial oath of office, they found. And the Judicial Service Commission also found that. And now you've got this gentleman as the leader of the opposition. And he represents a party, although they did swear allegiance to the Constitution, doesn't believe in the Constitution, wants to throw it out. So that's not going to be a very great template for debates going forward. On the other hand, because of the extremity of the position offered by the MK and the EFF, their sort of junior partners, I think it might prove a point of coalescence of the democratic centralists. And I have to say that we're going to see the colour of people's money now, because I would hope that the ANC will step up its democratic centrist credentials in confronting what is now the new opposition, which is no longer the sort of, the bogeymen and women of the DA, but the MK and the EFF.
Yeah. Tony, final question. Does the DA have an exit plan if it needs to get out? And should it make one?
I'm not aware. my late great friend, who I had to pay tribute to the other day at his memorial service, James Self, used to say the DA prepares for every contingency except for success. So, obviously you must have your bottom line, but I think, day one of this brave new world, it would not be the time to start saying what's our exit plan. But I'm sure that the party will consider its options as and when that happens, and hopefully it won't happen, because, obviously having been involved in setting up this rather ungainly GNU, I wish it success and hope it does succeed.
Well, Tony Leon, thank you so much for doing your country duty. Thank you so much for joining us and for your insights. And thank you for listening. And I'll be back soon. Goodbye and take care.